Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hello, and thanks for tuning into Taste Radio, the number one podcast for the food and beverage industry. I'm producer and host Ray Lateef, and you're listening to episode 220, which features an interview with Jim, Jake, and Jordan DeSico, the co-founders of surging beverage brand Kidu Life Super Coffee. Just a reminder, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And of course, I'd love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice. When we last featured the DeSico brothers on Taste Radio, it was May of 2018. Their two-year-old brand was still known as Seneva Super Coffee, was on pace to generate $3.5 million in revenue by the end of the year. Rebranded as Kidu Life in September of 2018, the company has since been on a torrid pace, having built a national distribution network and retail presence that includes Kroger, Publix, Target, and Walmart. Earlier this month, the company announced a master distribution agreement with Anheuser-Busch InBev, which will carry Super Coffee on its trucks nationwide. ABI also bought into the brand via its investment arm ZX Ventures as part of a new funding round for the company, expected to be in the $25 million range. Growing up fast? It's an understatement for Jim, Jake, and Jordan, who I recently spoke with about their company's spectacular rise. As part of our conversation, the brothers opened up about riding the wave of growth and why their success has been as much about avoiding the wrong moves as it is about making the right decisions. They also discussed the role that mentors and advisors have played in steering strategy, how they've adjusted their management style to meet the needs of an evolving workforce, why they've simplified communication about the beverages, and their perspective on raising capital and aligning with strategic investors. Hey folks, it's Ray with Taste Radio. I'm going to call right now with Jim, Jake, and Jordan DeSico, the co-founders of Kidu Life Super Coffee. Gentlemen, how are you?
Ray, we're doing well, man. Thanks for having us back on the show.
Thanks.
Jim, great to hear your voice. And who was that? It's Jordan?
Yeah, you got Jordan here. Thank you so much, Ray. Excited to be back on.
Excited to have you. And Jake, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm feeling dangerous, brother. How are you?
I like to hear it, my friend. I like to hear it a lot. And, you know, we had you guys on the show just about a couple of years ago. And I remember the first thing we started talking about was that you were all living in an apartment in a We Live building in New York. Are you guys still living together?
Yeah, man. Hey, Ray, this is Jim. Yes. So thankfully, we've graduated from We Live. That said, we all still live together. Jake, Jordan, and I, we're in the Seaport District of downtown Manhattan. Thankfully, we don't have to share a bathroom anymore. So we upgraded this year, but we work together. We live together. We travel together. We take vacations together. A lot of what we do is together.
Never stops, right?
You know, one of the other things we chatted about was your appearance on Shark Tank, which took place, I think it was about 4 months before we did our interview for that first episode of Taste Radio. And while you guys didn't get a deal, I'm sure the sharks are kicking themselves thinking that they probably should have pulled the trigger on a deal, in particular Rohan Oza, who turned you guys down. You think Rohan regrets his decision?
I don't think Rohan has enough humility to kick himself. just kidding, Ro. But in all seriousness, we're friendly with Rohan. He's one of the only sharks that we stayed in touch with after the show. As you guys know, he is a supporter of Bulletproof Coffee and High Brew Coffee. So unfortunately, we couldn't work together, but I think he's rooting for us, you know, and we're certainly stealing shelf space from his brands.
It's, you know, it's interesting because he's an investor in a brand called Poppy, which was originally called Mother Beverage. And Mother Beverage was the winner of the New Beverage Showdown the year that you guys were in the New Beverage Showdown.
We remember that. We lost to them. We remember.
Well, you didn't win. I wouldn't say you lost to them, but you didn't win the competition. But it's interesting to see that dynamic because they appeared on Shark Tank and Rohan did invest in that brand. But as you mentioned, Jim, he's already invested in a couple other coffee companies. $4.5 million in sales in 2018. You guys are projected to do $70 million this year, which is incredible. I wonder how much of the growth that you've been seeing was in the plans, in the cards, versus, you know, just going 1 million miles a minute and just hanging on for dear life.
Hey, Ray, you got Jake here. I'll take a first crack at this. I'm sure these guys will add on, but definitely the latter, right? Like, we're moving 1 million miles an hour and hanging on with dear life is how it seems a lot of the time. But I think, like, the biggest thing for us in the last 2 years and all of that revenue growth has really been organizational growth. And in adding the right people to the company and adding the right processes is really what has allowed us to achieve that scale and not go out of business in the process. And really adding the right investors, right distributors, right partners, right manufacturers, that has all been instrumental in our growth. And I think that we found something back in 2016 that worked and scaled it to, when we talked 2 years ago in 2018, that really was just the sweat equity of what Jim Jordan and I were putting in and some of our earliest employees who are basically our co-founders. And then the last 2 years, like I said, it was all about aligning ourselves with the right partners and making a commitment to true blitz scaling and trying to create something that's going to be around not just in 2 years, but in 22 years. That's really been our mentality over the last 2 years, really the last 12 months. It's been a big cultural shift internally for our organization.
I guess that after this is all over, you could probably write a book called The Art of Blitz Scaling, because that's exactly what it sounds like. Jake, you talked about the right partners, the right retailers, the right distributors, the right investors. But when you're going so fast, is it hard to be decisive about who you're aligning yourself with? Is it hard to make those decisions that could impact your brand, again, not just now, but 22 years from now?
Yeah, I would say, and this is something that we've preached from the beginning, it's not about going with the right partners. It's about avoiding the wrong partners. I truly believe that. And you're not going to bat 1,000, you know, that's impossible. But just our big thing has always been when we make big bets, you got to be right on those big bets. And we've done that a few times, especially with partners and also learning from those partners and those big bets. And one of the ones that comes to mind is the world of DSD. And that was a big bet that we probably didn't do right one of the first or second times. And then when we got with Big Geyser here in Metro New York, they're perhaps the toughest distributor to make it with in the country in this market of New York City. It definitely took a lot out of our company, our bandwidth. And we've been able to take those lessons of working with a Big Geyser type partner and now apply it nationwide and now into a master distribution agreement with Anheuser-Busch, and have over 400 distributor partners that cover every county in the country. So I think when it comes to partners, it's not always about getting the very best and being 100% on the great ones, but just really limiting the bad partnerships, because one too many bad partnerships is really what will put you out of the business in this business.
Yeah, and Ray, this is Jim. Just to add on there, I think the right way is the way that works, right? If you're going to make a decision, yes, to your point, when you're moving fast, you have to make quick decisions. Work hard to make those decisions the right decisions, whether it's Big Geyser or Polar or whoever. No distributor is going to build your brand without you supporting them. So I think once you act on a decision, it's you and your team's job to really make that the right move.
Jake, you mentioned that, you know, making it in New York City can be the blueprint for making it elsewhere in the country. And, you know, back when we talked a couple of years ago, a lot of what you mentioned in terms of distribution expansion was on a regional level. It seemed like your strategy was really grounded in this thoughtful dig deep in a particular region and own that region. You know, how has that changed? I mean, obviously you're going national now with AB, but was that national distribution play something that you guys have been thinking about for a long time, or is it that the opportunity presented itself and you were ready to run because you had been so prepared?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think our inch wide, mile deep strategy, you know, that you're referring to worked so well early on
for that product market fit stage, which was the first 2 years really in our business. And we kind of learned the nuances. And Jake mentioned the partnership with Big Geyser. I mean, we learned so much those first 2 years as a really small local company that we felt like, hey, we could go out and raise the capital we need, right? Because it's super important in this business, which we all know. The key thing that Jake mentioned was getting the right people in the right markets to lead the charge in those markets. And that's what's really allowed us to scale into a national brand. We still did it strategically, Ray, in a sense that it wasn't just like, okay, we won the Mid-Atlantic and we won New York Metro. Now let's go everywhere, right? It's been 2.5 years of the next market needs to be the best market for us. So Southern California, right, where we know our brand will resonate. Texas with a great partner like HEB to drive a lot of the volume in Texas. The Midwest with great partners like Jewel Osco and Meijer. And then if you go into the Pac Northwest, you need some of those Kroger divisions and you need some of those Safeway divisions. So you're still piecing it together strategically. It kind of comes together as a national distribution network. And that's when we decided, hey, we do have this really fragmented network now. We're doing a great job with our local teams, but it's kind of hard for our teams to do their best job without one common distribution partnership. And that's really where we decided to double down with Anheuser-Busch and make the MDA come to life, which we think is going to propel us for the next 12, 24 months as we continue to blitz scale.
Mike, I heard you're starting a beverage company.
Ray, let's say I was. Do you have any suggestions for a complete partner?
Absolutely. Ingredion. Ingredion is a leading global plant-based ingredient solutions provider to the food and beverage industry with a diverse portfolio, including sweeteners and sugar reduction technologies, plant-based proteins, starches, and hydrocolloids.
Of course. Ingredion's 360 value framework delivers value according to your brand's specific needs through consumer well-being, environmental impact, and value creation. Ingredient's market research and insights for innovation can help uncover opportunities within the beverage space. For instance, figuring out what added health benefits consumers need. They have a network of technical experts that will help you solve your pain points to get you to market faster. With Ingredient, you gain a partner who helps you deliver the total beverage experience that keeps consumers coming back.
To learn more about Ingredient, head to tasteradio.com/beverage.
The New Beverage Showdown returns to BevNet Live in New York City on June 12th and 13th. Pitch your beverage startup in front of a panel of expert judges, our live audience, and viewers tuning into the live stream. To learn more, visit bevnetlive.com.
The wrong decisions. I want to go back to that point that Jake made about making the wrong decisions. Was there a wrong decision that you successfully avoided? You know, when you're going into Texas or when you're going to Southern California, we've seen brands that just bite off more than they can chew, even if that opportunity is a great opportunity to drive awareness, drive revenue, you know, for one reason or another, it just didn't work out. Looking back, did you guys dodge a bullet? And if you did dodge a bullet on that wrong opportunity, what was the process by which you thought that this could be the wrong fit for your company?
Yeah, right. That's a great question. And there's two that come to mind. And the first takes us all the way back to 2017. We were 18 months into our business. We were doing really well in Wegmans on the East Coast. And we got a call from Kroger. And they said, hey, this super coffee is interesting. We like your positioning. It's a little simpler than Bulletproof. It's kind of like the Frappuccino. We want to launch you in one of our divisions. We want to be methodical, 150 stores. We're like, this is perfect. Like, where are we launching? They were like, Ralph's. That's LA and Southern California. We were like, well, we don't have anyone there. We can't run the playbook that we just ran at Wegmans to be successful there. And that was the first time that I think the three of us looked at each other and said, we can't do this. We don't have a plan to be successful there. So we passed on Kroger and we didn't get another bite at Kroger for another year and a half thereafter. We launched at Kroger earlier this year, actually. So that was a tough one for us. And then on a larger scale, back at the beginning of 2019, Walmart came to us and said, hey guys, we have our Taste of Tomorrow sets going live in 4,300 stores. We want to put four of your SKUs in, double face them. You'll have eight facings in the planogram. And we want to launch Super Coffee nationwide at Walmart. And all three of us right away said, this feels a lot like Ralph's back in 2017. We don't have the manpower. We don't have the playbook. We were just starting to get into a few regions of Target and really starting to do well there, but didn't have this national team built out. And that's what really, at the end of the day, the Super Coffee brand has worked because of our account level execution. So we had to make the really difficult decision to pass on Walmart. And again, that led to a year and a half almost in the penalty box at Walmart, where we just launched in Walmart recently in 900 stores in the Southeast. It's through our DSD network with Anheuser-Busch, and we're breaking sales records in those stores now at Walmart. But it was an example of having discipline and avoiding something that we just didn't feel confident in, and we didn't have the financials to do it. So I think those two examples are ones that probably come to three of us. Do you guys have any add-ons?
Yeah, right. Those are problems that we avoided, I think, or wrong decisions that we made. One of them is we were eager to launch in New York City. I think, as you know, we launched our brand in Washington, D.C. in 2016. And we wanted to tackle New York City, the state where we came from. So the first DSD partner that would take us was Dora's Naturals. And we were eager at the opportunity. Big Geyser wasn't returning our phone calls back then. So we eagerly jumped into New York with Dora's Naturals, and they proved to be the wrong partner. And granted, we had a lot to learn there, but we were a shelf-stable item. They were a refrigerated distributor, so there were some limitations there. And as you guys know, like, exclusive contracts in the DSD world are quite restrictive. So for us to leave Dora's to go to Big Geyser, it was a very expensive and, quite candidly, a seven-figure decision, seven-figure mistake that we made to do that. It was a great lesson. In a sense, Dora's served as an incubator to Big Geyser for us. So we really got our feet wet in New York City with Dora's before we paid the breakup fee and moved over to Geyser.
Yeah, that one's tough.
Seven-figure mistakes are kind of tough to recover from, especially if you're a small company. You know, I think about your brand versus other fast-growing beverage brands, and there's not a lot of them that have been in your position. And I'm thinking that, you know, throughout this process and making these tough decisions, that mentors and advisors have been so critical. What's been the most impactful guidance that you've heard from your mentors? And when I say mentors, I know the biggest of which, or probably the one that has guided you the most, is Seth Goldman from Honest Tea.
Yeah, we attribute a lot of our success to the guardrails that our mentors and advisors put in place, and Seth being the best one for the beverage industry. And even as recently as December of 2019, at our 2020 planning meeting, we had the whole company together and Seth was our guest speaker. And the lesson he's been preaching from day one too, which we've kind of bent a little bit, but is really make sure you're not losing touch on the focus strategy and supporting your core retailers, and don't try to grow too fast, because he's seen it, right? And now even at Beyond Meat, he understands that there are a lot of challenges, and we're experiencing those challenges now of just growing pains. That advice has been great for us, even though we have grown really quickly. Not growing too fast has guided those decisions, to Jake's point, of avoiding the Walmart mistake, avoiding the Kroger mistake, being methodical about what we do and where we go next. So that's been one thing that's been super helpful. I think another thing that is truly invaluable is just building the best quality team and being patient with your hiring and investing in hiring more than you'd ever imagine. A lot of people, also onboarding and training employees too, like, that's stuff that you don't have to worry about as a really young company. But as you scale, the best way to improve your company is literally by improving your hiring process and the people that you're adding to your company. So that was advice we've gotten from our board, from several entrepreneurs, from several different industries. And it's this universal principle. If you want to improve your company, just improve the quality of people you hire. And that's a principle that we take very seriously here right now.
Yeah. The one add-on I would have there too is, I think we were incredibly lucky to have Seth as our first and primary mentor. Then when you talk about comparing Super Coffee to Buy, the foundation that Seth laid for us to go to market, and then you can take Seth's focus and Seth's strategies and compare them to some of our other mentors, like a Jerry Rita from Big Geyser, or just some of the more aggressive folks like Ken Kurtz within the industry, I think really gave us a best of both worlds approach. And that's something that Jim does such a great job for our brand, is getting a diverse portfolio of advice so we can really understand how other brands have done it and how we can kind of put our own touch on it.
How many folks do you have on your team at this point?
We are 85 full-time and 150 part-time.
That is incredible. And I can't imagine the challenges of managing a complex network of folks like that. But what's clear is that you're willing to get your hands dirty. Jake, you mentioned at the top that, you know, you guys are doing demos at Wegmans. You're making those trips to introduce the brand to new consumers at the retail level. And what's clear is that you're not managing your business from a boardroom. When you are, you know, in the trenches with your team, is that something that resonates with them, or is it something where, you know, it feels like you're checking up on them? I guess what I'm asking is, how do you work with your team on the ground so that it feels like you're working shoulder to shoulder, you know, side by side, versus being a sort of supervisor or management employee relationship?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm going to go a little bit deeper. You got Jordan here, Ray, and it really comes back, actually, it starts with our purpose and our core values. So our purpose is to inspire positive energy for positive change. And we believe the best way to do that, in this business at least, is being face to face with our partners, with our customers, doing the frontline work. So it's something that we preach practically every single day, right? So it's not a surprise to our team when they see us on our hands and knees packing out the shelves or doing a demo with them, right? So it starts with that purpose, but then actually living up to that. There's a great book that Jake and I, Jake's reading it right now, but it's called What You Do Is Who You Are by Ben Horowitz. I recommend it to every entrepreneur, but it basically says, like, look, be very clear about your purpose and your values as founders and as a company, but then make sure that you're living up to them every single day. So it's almost like we preach being out in the field and supporting our partners so much that if we weren't out in the trade doing it with our team, they would kind of think, wait a minute, these guys aren't legit. They're not, you know, living up to the words they're telling us every day. So that's why we're out in the trade every day. And I think everybody knows how important it is in this business. So it makes sense for us to preach it, but it makes more sense for us to make sure we're actually out there doing what we're preaching.
Yeah, very well said. To the question too, when we are out in the trade, it's certainly not checkups. You know, other brands use this idea of like a milk run, like show me your best, show me your worst. We use it as an opportunity to spend time reinforcing our purpose with our teams, seeing what they're seeing, seeing the challenges that come up in their markets. Each market is so uniquely different. From New York City to Houston to Austin to NorCal, SoCal, every market is uniquely different. And as sales leaders, we can't set goals and set objectives and case minimums for those markets. If you've never been on a route ride in San Francisco, that's going to be very different than a route ride in Los Angeles. So that's one thing that we certainly want to practice what we preach. And then another thing is just our teams go through so much in the field. And I think the past quarter, Q2, has been a unique challenge with all of the COVID stuff that hit, and obviously in food and beverage we were an essential industry. But right when COVID broke, those first couple cases up in the Pacific Northwest, the first thing that Jim Jordan and I did, we talked about it, and I got on a flight and went worked with our rep up there in Seattle and Portland, just so we had all of the information. So to your point, we never want to be making boardroom decisions without firsthand insights of what's happening in the market. And I think that's really what's allowed our 85 full-timers to be aligned with three kids running this company that have never done it before, but we're willing to do it with them right now.
Jim, you and I chatted before this interview, and you mentioned that you have admired Howard Behar, who was a former president of Starbucks. And one of the things that stood out to you guys was that he mentioned treat employees not as a line item, but as human beings. And I thought that was a really amazing thing to say. At the same time, you know, employees don't always work out. And there are some people that are better fit than others. When you go through that hiring process and when you do evaluate your employees as they develop within your company, what are some of the signs that something isn't working? And how do you have that conversation with a person so that you can get them back on the right track, or if necessary, let them go?
Yeah. And this is something that Jordan and I are especially passionate about, Jake too. But I mean, we stand behind this idea that our team is our barrier to entry. And with that, it's, if you take care of your people, they take care of the business. And that's a line straight from Howard Behar, who's taken us under his wing as one of our mentors. And he at Starbucks, for Howard, it wasn't about the coffee. It was about the people. And there wasn't customers and there wasn't employees. It was human beings serving human beings. So for us to, I think leading from the front lines is a good example. Leading by example gets people to buy into the mission and sort of do as you do rather than as you say, because I think you got to be about action rather than sort of just verbalizing it. And the trickiest thing when somebody's not working out, if they're not bought into the mission, if they're not they're not doing what you expect them to do, the hardest part as a manager or a leader is having those candid, transparent conversations with them. You know, I think a lot of people avoid those conversations because they're uncomfortable. But for us to be transparent with our people and let them know, I mean, we have a rule here. It's called the commitment to trust. And I'll say to you, I'll be like, hey, Ray, man, we got to have a commitment to trust conversation. And when you hear that as the listener, it triggers, okay, I got to listen respectfully. I'm going to get hit with some constructive feedback right now. Keep an open mind. Don't get defensive. And for me, my intention as the one delivering that feedback needs to be to make you better as a human being, as an individual, and as a teammate at Super Coffee. And it's those conversations where we lay out like, hey, man, you're not really living up to the expectations. And sort of talk through data points, right? You provide the data to what they're not doing, and then you provide recommendations on what you'd like to see them do. And also a willingness, right? Like, don't just tell somebody they need to get better. Say, I'm willing to help you get better by hit more accounts with you today, or have a weekly one-on-one to debrief what you achieved. So as managers, not just the three brothers, but all of the managers within the Super Coffee team, they need to have those relationships and those critical conversations with their direct reports. Jordan, I don't know, is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah. No, I'll just touch on before that. And this comes straight from, we learned from some advisors from Google and their people operations team. But again, the best way to improve, right? If you're having employee issues, you know, you got to look at the root cause, which is ultimately your hiring process. So we want to make sure we're hiring great people who share our values, who are going to make the company better. And obviously, you know, we're not naive in the sense that we know not every employee is going to be perfect, no matter how detailed the hiring process is. So we kind of like to think of it as looking at the two tails of performance. You have your top 10 to 20% of people, and you want to make those people your role models in the company. So figure out what makes your top 10% of people the best people in the company and amplify those qualities in those people. And then you got to find the bottom 10 to 20% of people, the 10 to 20% who haven't figured it out yet at Super Coffee and aren't performing as good as they can. And instead of saying, you know, doing the old school way of cut your bottom 10%, no, how can we invest in these people? Because if we hired them, there was something in them that we saw, and you can look back at the hiring reports, something in them that we saw that we loved. So let's try to get it out of them. And we do quarterly performance reviews. We use objectives and key results, OKR format. So we're constantly giving feedback, constantly trying to help. And yes, over a period of time, a quarter, 2 quarters, we have probations and performance improvement plans and these things. If it's not working out, then you just got to tell the employee, hey, you know, it isn't working out. Probably best for you and ultimately best for the company if we decide to go separate ways. So again, culture, maintaining culture and scaling it, you can obviously put a lot of practices and techniques in place, but sometimes letting go of people, letting them go their separate ways is the best thing you can do.
Is it hard sometimes because the work-life balance for you guys skews more toward work? I mean, is it hard for you guys because work is such an important part of your lives and such a dominant part of your lives to see someone that has to take time off for their families or that has a different kind of work-life balance?
Yeah, it's a good question, man. And it's something that we had to get better at and sort of evolve with as the team grew. But for the three of us, we work a lot, but we love what we do, you know. And I think what we're starting to see in America and sort of globally is this shift, especially with millennials and Gen Zs, that work and life are starting to become synonymous, right? And it's the age-old adage of if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. It's true. You know, this is a lifestyle, and we don't mind working on Saturdays and Sundays. You know, we enjoy it. Our family's into it. Like, this is our life. You know, it's not a job, and we don't punch out at 5 p.m. That said, we do have many employees who have families and young children who, especially right now, it's very difficult because they're now stay-at-home teachers, you know, with that, we do ask a lot of our people. This is not Super Coffee's not for everybody. You know, it's not a 9-to-5, like I said. And with that, we do offer unlimited paid time off if people are getting their jobs done. It's one of those things, like, if you perform, if you hit your goals, if you do what you're supposed to do, we don't care where you work from. We don't care when you work, as long as it's getting done. And Even sometimes, I mean, we have a lot of people who love to work really hard, and to avoid burnout, we almost have to encourage them to take vacation, because otherwise burnout is a very real thing.
Some people have mandatory time off.
Yeah, mandatory vacation.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Mike Kerbin from Vita Coco mentioned that very thing. He said, you know, there are some people that will just never take time off. And he's just like, look, get out of here. You know, you need time off. And if you're not going to take it on your own, I have to make you physically get up out of your seat and go home, which is important. I think, you know, the burnout is real. And there are some people who are just workaholics, you know, for better or for worse. It sounds like you are personally evolving in terms of how you see this work-life balance.
Yeah, Ray, that was something that was really hard for us, truly. And a lot of the people that we hire, or our initial hires, were first-time professionals, you know, joining the Super Coffee team. And when we try to lead from the front the way that we do, it can create some pressure for our employees to feel like they need to do the same. And very candidly, I think that's been something that the three of us have faced and tried to work on and been open to and have more empathy, just because there are some people on our team that this is a job. They come in, they put in their time, they hit their goals, and they crush it, you know. And if they're exercising their unlimited PTO, that's what we want, you know. And I think that's taken some growing up from the three of us to be okay with that and recognize that this person has a family. That's what makes them great. For a lot of our employees is providing for their family. So they should be able to spend time with them. But that was definitely some of the evolution of the three brothers for sure.
Mike, I was just in the kitchen and I saw this really cool THC-infused beverage brand called Eighth Wonder.
Ah, chill brand. They make cannabis bevs as well as beer and spirits. The product you're talking about is a super tasty cherry limeade cannabis seltzer called Lil Bit. And did you know Eighth Wonder was acquired last year by Houston's BioCity Hemp?
Yes, I did. That deal created a world-class, vertically integrated cannabis and craft beverage company. Bio's science-based processes for extracting THC from hemp have made the company the gold standard for cannabis products across Texas and beyond.
Bio's cannabis portfolio includes Eighth Wonder as well as Howdy and Beach Break, all of which are distributed throughout Texas and Louisiana.
You can learn more about all these brands at eighthwonder.com, siphowdy.com, and sipbeachbreak.com.
On June 12th and 13th in New York City, hear from Icelandic Glacial, Lemon Perfect, GoPuff, Sachet, Diageo Ventures, and Lowe's Foods during the leading event for the beverage industry. Save on BevNet Live tickets through April 26th. Just visit BevNetLive.com.
So we know what makes your employees great, or we know what you expect out of your employees to make them great. Let's talk about what makes the liquid great. You know, when we first met you guys at BevNet Live and you participated in the New Beverage Showdown, a lot of what Super Coffee was seemed to focus on function. And it was not a complex beverage, but it wasn't just a regular cup of coffee. There was a lot more going into that. And it seems like the perception of what Super Coffee is in terms of a beverage has changed. Consumer perception, that is. Can you talk about, you know, how you've had to change your positioning or how you've had to adjust your marketing and promotion to fit what consumer perception of the brand is today?
Definitely. Yeah. And you got Jordan here. And similar to my comment on improving the company with adding great people, we also believe the best way to improve the company is by improving your products and only launching better products than your current products. So to that, Ray, I think early on, you know, and there's a book out there called Crossing the Chasm that I'll refer here, but we were solely focused on function, right? Solely focused on MCT oil and keto. And it was confusing because we also wanted to be like this delicious, better for you Starbucks item, but it wasn't clicking in the customer's mind. It didn't reflect it in our packaging whatsoever. None of our POS or digital marketing was relating with people. So while we did have a very core group of early adapters, which is talked about in the book, it wasn't scalable and we were never going to cross that chasm into a mainstream brand until we might have done this backwards, we admit, because we didn't have a lot of capital, but until we actually took the time to say, wait a minute, let's slow down here. So it wasn't until a year and a half into our business where we invested in a branding agency and branding exercises. We did all of our own branding in-house, and that's why it was confusing, because the three of us each had our different view of what we wanted the product or brand to be. So finally, we wised up and said, hey, we do have a good product. We do have some product market fit, but if we want to be a mainstream brand and challenge Starbucks, we got to, you know, invest in the brand itself. So what we ultimately landed on was Key to Life, which was the rebrand from Seneva, with Super Coffee really taking the stage and simplifying our message less from MCT oil and keto to better for you, zero sugar, but still great, great taste. And we found immediately with the new packaging and new materials to go along with that, it resonated much more. People just wanted the Starbucks Frappuccino, but they just didn't want 40 grams of sugar to go with it. So we wanted to be that brand that catered to that. And oh, by the way, if you are keto and you do like MCT oil, then you're really going to love our products. But we made it as accessible for a college kid who was drinking Starbucks Frappuccinos every day as we did for, you know, the keto 40-year-old mom who's always on the go. So it was about bridging that gap for the customer, obviously constantly improving the product line, but it was more to your point of improving and simplifying our messaging so we could cross that chasm to become a mainstream brand.
I'm sure retailers love that, at least mainstream retailers, when it's very easily understood by the consumer what your product is, certainly help them to pick it up and put it in their carts. You know, in terms of retailers, you guys, every time I look at Instagram, I see just these incredible displays, end caps, you know, center store, I don't know what you'd call them, like mountains of bottles. You know, how do you get retailers on your side? I mean, we talked about Walmart and Kroger and turning them down and you know, it being hard to get back in their good graces. But, you know, once you are in their good graces, how do you work together hand in hand so that the brand is not only succeeding, but thriving in their stores?
Yeah. You got Jake here, Ray. And I mean, that's a great question. I mean, that's like the billion-dollar question of our industry. Is how do you turn your retailers into partners? You know, like that is what our team is fighting with every day. A big piece of that starts with simple positioning, which Jordan just touched on, that the customer needs to understand it. And once you can start showing some success and you can start showing some customer adoption, is really just going deep. And that a lot of the time starts at the account level. It's the most basic blocking and tackling of our industry. But just being there and putting the retailer's needs first is really what we preach to our teams, understanding how can we add value to your set. We know that Super Coffee can add value in a variety of ways, but the Kroger in downtown Houston, we might add value to that store differently than we do to the Wegmans outside of Rochester, New York. So that's one thing that we're always focused on, whether it's our field marketing team that can offer some awesome weekend activation, or it's our distributor who can service them 3 days a week. Whatever it is, it always comes back to this idea of adding value for the retail partner first. I think that's how we position ourselves as partners. And then secondly, just using data to our advantage is really what we try and equip our field teams with, is push the data story. We always go in as a high margin category item, even if it hurts our margin. We know that the retailers want to have best in class margin. And then last but not least, the philosophy we use internally is look like a billion-dollar brand. That's what we ingrain in our sales team's heads, our field marketing team's heads, is if the retailer is going to give you space in their store, make it look pretty. Don't let it be dangling boxes. Don't put POS up that looks absurd. Play to that retailer's strengths. But I think those three steps of adding value, leveraging data, and then looking like a billion-dollar brand in the space is really our playbook from taking a retailer to a partner.
And I just want to add on too, Jake mentioned that, and obviously our team going brick by brick is how we refer to it, but literally store by store, building those relationships at the store level is so key. And that's why you need the people in this space. And that's why the people, not the coffee, make all the difference. And the last piece that Jake didn't touch on was also profitability for our customers. We know that a lot of these retailers make a 20 to 25% margin on the category leader of Starbucks Frappuccino. We know that. So we make sure on Super Coffee, they make a 35 to 40% gross margin. So they're making more money when they sell our bottles what other incentive, obviously, than just being great people and great partners behaviorally, you know, what other incentive matters for them? So to Jake's point, how can we help? How can we make you look good, make you feel good about giving us this 100 case display at the store level? And that's what's worked really well for us.
Raising money is one of the most challenging parts of the beverage industry. There's no getting around it. And it seems to be the number one issue that entrepreneurs have. You guys have been raising money at a pretty healthy clip. And as you mentioned, have recently partnered with Anheuser-Busch and gotten investment from their venture capital arm, ZX Ventures. You know, it's really interesting because I can imagine that there have been a lot of suitors over the past couple of years. You know, when you decided to align with Anheuser-Busch, what made that opportunity really attractive versus, say, a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi or a Starbucks or, you know, Nestle?
Yeah, so I'll kick this off, and then Jake's got a lot more color here. But we started building a relationship with ZX Ventures and the Anheuser-Busch team back in the summer of 2018, so about 2 years now. Stayed in touch over the years. We didn't do a deal with them in our Series A, which closed in December of 2018. 2019, they tracked our progress. We told them a number that we'd hit that year, and we beat that number. So that validated our brand and sort of our sort of ability to go out and drive sales. And really this year, as we were looking to do something bigger with some of the partners you alluded to, we were raising our Series B, we were talking to strategics. A couple of things happened in the beverage industry that really where the stars aligned for this partnership to really make the most sense. And I mean, my brothers and I, like we started Super Coffee to attack the Starbucks Frappuccino, and sort of joining them in the North American Coffee Partnership with Pepsi would have been awesome. You know, it would have been a cool dream come true. That said, in Q1 of this year, Pepsi acquired Rockstar Energy, and they announced that they would be distributing Bang Energy. And we saw, even though we had an opportunity to work with Pepsi this year, we thought that they would be focused on the transition of those two multi-billion dollar brands between Rockstar and Bang, in addition to pushing all of the Starbucks Frappuccino. That said, we've already been working with a bunch of AB wholesalers. We recognized AB lost $1 billion in revenue by this Bang transitioning out of AB's system into Pepsi's system. And we had a strong position to become AB's number one focus in non-alcohol this year. And we worked to build an exclusive contract with them, and we were able to execute on that pretty swiftly after that announcement of Bang's departure.
Yeah, one thing I'll add on, a good story about how really the AB deal came to life, and this goes out to our good friends out there in the desert at Hensley Beverage. We were getting ready to grow in that market. We had just hired a really talented regional sales manager who was based there in Phoenix. She was running some of the Sprouts business for us. That's where their headquarters is. And we really wanted to get some strong DSD behind it. And we knew that Hensley's really the best in the state of Arizona. We got the contact information for the team at Hensley and hit them up and said, hey, we're going to be in the market and would love to have a meeting if you're there. We weren't going to be in the market, but we flew out anyway once we were able to land a meeting. We had that meeting with them. They really were aligned with Super Coffee, but they said, hey, guys, there's one limiting factor, and we have an exclusive on our coffee portfolio with the Keurig Dr. Pepper brands. So while we would love to work with Super Coffee, like, we can't do that. So what Jim mentioned, we went back to the relationship that we had been cultivating with the team at AB Corporate and said, hey, guys, here's this scenario. We have one limiting factor. Is there any loopholes? They said, no, sorry, boys. That's all we got. A week later, we get a call from Anheuser-Busch saying, hey, guys, we did find a loophole. You must have made a strong impression on the team at Hensley because they really want your brand. And the loophole is if we align as some type of strategic partnership, then we can launch you guys at Hensley and get around that exclusivity. So we put together a small case milestone where Anheuser-Busch could earn equity in our brand. And this is back 9 months ago. And it gave us the opportunity to launch at Hensley. And from then, Jim Jordan and I have had access to a lot of the folks within Anheuser-Busch. We've took a step from like courting each other to formally dating, learning each other's systems. And along the way, we really learned that we think that Anheuser-Busch and Super Coffee can kind of build this next wave of coffee together. But it really did just start from some cold emails, to Jim's point, keeping a relationship alive from back in summer of 2018 when they chose not to invest us, and being a little scrappy in enforcing a meeting on the guys at Hensley. So I think it's just a great scrappy story of how to form a long-term partnership. And now we hope to be partners with Anheuser-Busch for the next 20 or 30 years.
Well, it's got to be amazing to look back on those 2 years when you're asking probably for a small amount of money and then saying, hey, our company's valuation is X today. And Anheuser-Busch saying, wow, you know what? You're right. We're going to have to invest a lot more money than we could have when we did in 2018. That being said, when you are making these deals and selling equity in your company, how much concern do you have about dilution, about losing control of your business? Because this is a story we've seen countless times in the food and beverage industry.
Yeah, and it's a tough paradox because in order to grow as quickly as we're growing and build a business that's valuable to strategics, we need to do it with other people's money. You know, and right, you and I talked about this. We're building our dreams with other people's money. And I think some entrepreneurs say that they'd rather own a small percentage of a big company than 100% of a small company. And this is the path that we've chosen. You know, you've likened us to buy. BAI. And I think that's right. You know, it's the buy and vitamin water. There are other examples of brands that have raised a lot of cash to grow quickly. We're not totally concerned with dilution because we recognize that we do need to raise money to grow quickly. And at the same time, those investors that are coming on are sort of adding value to the business as well. So, and the one other point to mention is even though Jake Jordan and I don't own the majority equity or outstanding shares, we do control 3 out of our 5 board seats. So we are still the decision makers, which was important to us throughout this fundraising process.
I can imagine it would be. Well, you know, this is just such an amazing story. And I feel like we could probably do a podcast interview once every 6 months just to check in and see how you guys are growing, because you are growing so fast. And it is in many ways similar to that vitamin water buy story. And it's just going to be incredible to see where Super Coffee and you guys are in a year's time. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with me this morning. Good luck with everything going forward. And yes, let's catch up in Boston or New York really soon. I have a feeling it's going to be fun.
Yes, sir.
Awesome, Ray. Right. Thank you so much, brother.
Thanks for the opportunity, man.
The pleasure is ours. Thank you.
See you soon, Ray.
Thank you very much, guys. See you soon. That brings us to the end of episode 220. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our guests, Jim, Jake, and Jordan DeSico. You can catch both Taste Radio and Taste Radio Insider on tasteradio.com, the Apple Podcasts app, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.